Okay, we're back. Welcome, everybody. I am now back from two weeks of a very nice vacation. I saw an annular solar eclipse, and I went to Central America and did scuba diving and hiking in the jungle. It was very nice. It was nice to be disconnected for a while. So, but we're back, and I do first want to acknowledge the people that were most involved in getting the Climate Literacy Network's response to the draft Next Generation standards, science standards. I really appreciate everybody's effort, but especially Don Dugenhaus and Karen Holwig and Scott Carlin and Frank Niepold were. My understanding is that the main people that were involved in that. And so before we go any further, I'd like to ask, are there any other announcements?
Peg, well, do you have any contributions on the Next Generation? I mean,
well, to tell you the truth, Frank, I did not have a chance to read them.
Oh, no,
I really was disconnected.
but Peg, you're on the line, right?
Yeah, I am.
Do you feel like they got a good response? Do you have any sense of how that process went on their side?
No, I don't. You mean on the Achieve side?
Yeah.
No, I haven't heard anything from them. I think that there was a number of communities that gave really great input. I think, you know, the climate input from this group, it was valuable. I read it. And the ocean community, ocean education community, was very active. And NOAA also put in a response to physical life, earth disciplines. So,
right.
So I think there was at least response from those three communities.
Great, thanks.
I think we can assume that Mark stuff went in also from.
Mark put Mark for NCSE.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Shared that with us also. So
okay.
Some of this material I've heard in two places at least.
My understanding is, I don't know if it's played out, but my understanding is that NAGT was also going to make a response, but it was really not part of the conversation after hearing that they were planning it. Okay, so other announcements. I sent an email out earlier. There's going to be a sea level rise summit in Boca Raton, Florida in a couple of weeks. I'm actually going to be there giving a presentation about clean, and so just wanted everybody to know about that. The email I sent out was an announcement of it, but it also had a few videos that people might find interesting, one about sea level rise in Florida itself, and then another about sea level rise that impacts an island nation in the South Pacific. So those might be of interest to people. Are there any other announcements? Okay, well then I'd like to actually get back to the conversation we kind of started having while we were waiting for people to call in. Scott, why don't you sort of describe what you did? This was a part of the process of providing input. Scott started a crosswalk between the Next Generation Science Standards and the Climate Literacy Center Principles. So Scott, why don't you describe what you did and so everybody understands what
you're
doing.
Sure, and I think actually everyone on the list actually got the final version. There's a version 4 that I think Frank had the last set of edits on, so I think everyone should have those somewhere in their email. But I can just go through what I started doing. I start off with the essential principles and fundamental concepts, and then just try to map those to the various performance expectations. So there was basically trying to find out whether all of our concepts and principles were actually covered by the performance expectations. And I think as we found, and I think Frank, you would agree, we certainly found gaps, quite striking gaps, that are just simply not covered in the standards. And we had some discussion in the last 2 weeks about that, certainly some concerns around the fact that humans don't seem to be playing a very big role in the science standards, which kind of is shocking, but that's really, I mean, human health is not in there. Organisms are talked about, but no sort of human dimension to it. So it's a bit of a surprise to us. And that's one way that this kind of analysis starts to pull out some of the things that we've felt were quite important in climate literacy, but maybe have not been expressed yet in the performance expectations.
So, Scott, they were, again, coming from not having...
No problem. We've been working on it for several weeks.
Were they not really represented even in the life sciences part of the standards?
Let me put it this way. Don't get me started on the life science section.
Okay.
Of all the sections, and I'll be quite frank, it's the poorest represented. It was not done very well at all. I think, Peg, you can back me up. I don't think we're telling too many tales here, but the folks in the ocean community were quite shocked by it because, in fact, the performance expectations are a step backward in terms of including ocean stuff from what was actually in the framework. So it was not handled very well. I don't know who's responsible for it, but we certainly found it on the climate side, too, that that was the area. It's very telling to find that the Earth and Space Science section is stronger about the human impacts than the life science side. Very interesting.
but also in just the role humans play in the systems.
Mm-hmm.
As a living organism in this part of the biosphere is way stronger in the earth sciences than it is in the life sciences.
Yeah.
So I would concur with that.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising.
I think
so. Certainly there are comments on that, certainly from those of us in climate, and I know the ocean stuff is strong. I haven't seen too many other ones. Just to finish off what I worked on, I also then did the reverse table, which is to take each of the, or at least some of the prime performance expectations and then say which of the climate literacy principles and concepts relate to that. So you get, there's a table there that says, oh, okay, well, this particular one, you know, WCI or something, has about six or seven of our concepts and principles associated with it. So that was a way just to sort of see, oh, okay, well, that's, if we're starting to look at language for that principle or for that performance expectation, here's some of the language that we have in our standards. Are those being reflected again in those particular performance expectations? We were very early on, Tom Keller, I think Tom's last name is Keller.
Yeah.
You know, and Ted Willard made it very clear to us that we were not to be rewriting the framework. Our only... thing to comment on really was the performance expectations and how they were worded and how they came out of the three dimensions, the practices, cross-cutting concepts, and the disciplinary ideas. So that's the short version.
Mm-hmm.
Scott, is it sheet 3, table 1, the one you're talking about where you kind of re-walked it backwards, or is that a...
Yeah. Yeah, I did this whole thing in Numbers, which is the Apple program, and it actually presents the stuff in a slightly different way. A sheet is separate from a table. You can have multiple tables on a sheet. That's why it's labeled that way when I convert it into Excel. So the second sheet there is just simply a list of the sort of acronyms that I used related to the science and engineering practices, 1, 2, 3, 7 or whatever it is. And then the third one is this relationship between the various performance expectations and then which concepts and principles are associated with them.
Right.
So, just as a first cut. This is definitely a work in progress.
Right. This I didn't put any time into this sheet.
Yeah. Well, that was what I started using when I started making comments on the very specific performance expectations, because now I had something that I can relate back to, our languaging around all of that stuff. So, trying to
see what
after. But 3 weeks is not very much time to really get to this level of analysis. So, it will, it's something we'll do in the fall.
But Scott, maybe you want to, I think everyone on the call saw the language, the kind of the letter language we had.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to talk about that at all? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, you mean the stuff that I think
Don
drafted?
Yeah.
Well, I think we sent that out. It was certainly a reflection of our general comments over those two, the last two calls. Well, I don't know, Frank. You probably have a sense of what you
I mean, the what I was referring to was because there was some kind of high level language that was used to describe, and I'm trying to find. Actually, of course, I brought it up, and then I can't find it exactly what it was. But the letter, I'm not sure how that letter was shared and where it was shared, but the final, I'm coming up on it, I hope.
Frank, I'm not really sure what it is you're referring to.
Yeah, this is the idea was we found the survey instrument rather difficult to use,
right.
Very structured, and so for freeform comments, it's actually very hard to figure out where one would do those.
Yep.
And I think if I understand what Don and Karen did, they actually sent a separate letter to Achieve.
Right.
And this is actually somewhat similar to what the Ocean community did, too. Everyone felt like they needed to have sort of a cover letter to this.
So there was a letter that was sent in?
Yeah, I guess either Don or Karen are on the phone right now, and I'm not exactly sure how they handled that. I certainly know that they put things into the survey instrument, but... at any other time, I think.
Yeah, there was a link to a Google document.
I put that together before I left.
Yeah, the Google document is just to the feedback, and it's like a letter in a style. I'll send the link to you, Tamara,
okay.
If you like. But basically, one of the things in our effort to be constructive and supportive of the advances that the framework and the standards offer for what we're trying to accomplish in the Climate Literacy Network, there's a lot of promise.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of opportunity, especially in the engineering and engineering and something.
Fine.
Yeah, that part. Plus the Earth systems aspects and climate being a central, but our concepts show up across the board in the standards. It's not just the Earth sciences; it shows up all over the place, and there are lots of really good, promising places. Now that being said, there were gaps that could be stronger. Systems thinking could be much more prevalent. You know, ecosystem health was not as strong as possibly. Public health was not strong. Social science standards is obviously missing because that doesn't exist. And there's some other larger points that were raised in the analysis. And just to put it back to what Scott was doing with the process, while we didn't use that directly, Scott, I found it really helped us be able to make those kind of global analysis statements because
right.
We did have a structure to carefully do our analysis
that was the evidence. For
you mean this crosswalk?
Yeah,
stuff?
The crosswalk, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clear that the climate stuff is completely infused in the standards all the way through. And it's not just at high school level. It really starts right kindergarten.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, it's mostly weather, but it's starting that sort of process. And I think the bringing in of the practices, the science and engineering practices, is really helpful too.
Yep.
And there's a lot that's really right about all this that feels really good. And that's why the deficiencies are kind of surprising, because other parts are so good.
I'd like to throw in something here, and it's sort of the silo concept of
mm-hmm.
science people and science education and what they do include and what they don't include well.
Mm-hmm.
And I can speak certainly from the Massachusetts frameworks. When we were looking to do a crosswalk with the NAAEE guidelines and our own state frameworks, I found as many connections in the health framework as in the science framework. Now, I'm from biology science background, but it's a lot of the human health stuff, as well as environmental health, is found in the health framework rather than within the science framework. So I think we need to keep a heads up. I can hear the group feeling some, we're recognizing that there's missing pieces from the climate literacy principles that are not in the next generation science standards. And a lot of it is the relationship to human health and environmental health.
Right.
So we should keep our ears and eyes open for those kinds of standards changes, which hopefully will be coming down the pipe.
Can you, I'm not familiar with the health framework you're referring to. What is that? Is that a Massachusetts initiative?
That's what I don't know. We have a Massachusetts health framework, just as there is a science framework.
Right.
And health is not one of the, quote, four core disciplines of math and language arts, social studies, and science. So health is not one of those four. However, it is a requirement that kids take health. So a lot of the stuff that we really care about that is human-oriented and towards society-oriented stuff, a lot of that is found within Massachusetts, within the health standards.
Right.
Now, I don't know if there's a national set of health standards or not. Does anybody else know?
I haven't heard of any.
Stands to reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, but what this is sort of pointing out to me, I think, is that one of the things we're probably seeing by these gaps is a sense of a lack of the transdisciplinary kinds of thinking that is really needed to address climate issues. People are just really trained in terms of their disciplinary thinking and maybe a bit of interdisciplinary thinking, but because this is becoming a transdisciplinary problem, but people, not everybody, and that's why the input from a broad spectrum of people is important, because I think this will help make that effort to be inclusive of all of these different kinds of connections, which probably, it's not surprising, is not in this first draft to the level that we would like it to be.
Mm-hmm. But it also, Tamara, raises an interesting opportunity, because if I remember right, Massachusetts is one of the 26 state partners.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a section in these standards that it's toward the bottom of each one of the standard pages with all these connection links and stuff. But, you know, like with Massachusetts, the connections to their health framework are very real in our work, are very real potentially in the framework, but they're not so strong in the standards. And so, but when you get to the state level for actually implementing these consistent standards, those connections can be done, but at a state level, because while it's going to be different per state, but it can be done some places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a rich opportunity that maybe I hadn't appreciated until just this moment.
Well, you know, one of the things I wrote was, in my personal response and when I fed back to you guys, was we need to keep our heads up. The next major development that I see coming down the pike is going to be the social studies framework, and that will be part of the Common Core. So I think the science standards will need to be connected to the social studies ones as they are revised. And statewide, I agree with you, what Massachusetts would certainly need to look at is how health hooks in with the Common Core.
Right. Will the social studies be Common Core? Like the next generation science aren't Common Core, but they will actually be going Common Core?
It's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that yet.
Right. It's to be determined, right?
Right.
Yeah,
why was it decided that the science standards are not Common Core?
Okay, this is Peg. Let me jump in.
I was waiting for that.
The Common Core is is the agreed upon math and language arts standards agreed upon by 49 states.
Mm-hmm.
Science was not part of that. All the states are in different cycles of standards development and approval. However, 26 states have said that they would like to be on board and add this to the suite of Common Core standards with
mm-hmm.
science. But they right now they have agreed to consider. They have not necessarily agreed to it. But all of those 26 states that are in the effort right now are, again, in different cycles. So this is not something that's going to be, while there will be interconnections to the Common Core standards mm-hmm. of math and language arts, the science is not considered Common Core yet. Might be later.
But why? And the same is true for social studies?
That I haven't even seen any information on social studies.
Right. But Peg, isn't it true?
Because of the No Child Left Behind legislation requiring states to assess progress in math and language, but they did not have assessments for science and social studies?
Yeah, I think that was one of the driving things here.
I think that's the root of it.
Mm-hmm.
Say that again?
I think that the reason math and language arts are Common Core is because mm-hmm. when the No Child Left Behind legislation was passed at the federal level, it focused on states testing kids on language and math.
Right.
And it did not focus on science and social studies at all. And sadly, the effect of that has been many elementary schools have kind of dropped or their emphasis on science and social studies, or they barely get it in at all.
Right. But there's another driver that I think is important here is that the Race to the Top funds map pretty well to the 26 states that are involved in the science, Next Generation Science Standards. And so there's probably some, you know, not strong-arming, but some connection between those two, and I've heard it loosely connected. So, I mean, why only 26 out of not 49? I think it's just, you know, it could be out of phase. It could be they want to go their own way on science. I think it's probably a combination of factors, but it's a little hard to tell.
Right,
Frank, Scott. If I remember correctly, I thought the 26 states were sort of lead agents or lead states with respect to this process. It wasn't. I didn't get a sense it was only 26 that would be involved. That was just there were 26 that said, "Oh yeah, we're willing to really be deeply engaged in this," but the other ones are kind of still out there. Did I understand that correctly?
The other ones are still out there. The 26, by agreeing to strongly consider adopting the science standards, were able then to have members from their states on the
right
committees. But that
doesn't
preclude
the other states from adopting it in any sense.
Oh, absolutely
or
not.
Not at all.
Isn't around it.
Exactly. You're exactly correct.
But they do want to have the 26 or whoever holds at the end of the process actually, you know, commit and actually do implement a consistent set of common standards across those states, and then others can join. There's nothing barring them from joining, but they do want to go in with a committed set.
Well, they're not committed yet.
Well, I understand that, but is it fair to say, now I know they're not committed yet, but they do want to actually, at the end of the process, have committed states, as many as possible.
Yeah.
Well, and I think because these standards are still in a state of flux, because we're still looking at probably, I don't know, two or three iterations before they're finalized, you know, the states are kind of taking a wait and see, you know, on some of this to see whether they want to adopt, which is their prerogative.
Of course. Peg, is it true that when this adoption happens, all of those states adopt the same standards? Whatever these standards are, they're the same for all 26, right? Is that still true?
That's true, but how this, you know, what the flavor, the difference in the flavor is going to be at the implementation and the assessment
levels.
And so that's where you'll see a lot of personalization. you know, depending on you know, state interests and funding levels to implement this. And I think again, some of these states are in various stages of their adoption cycles for the standards, revision and adoption. So some, for some of this, you know, this might be a, you know, 5 to 10 year adoption process. So
I see.
Nothing's going to happen quickly here.
That's clear.
So even though they only gave us 3 weeks to turn around comments, nothing is going to happen very quickly here.
That's funny that they spend a lot of time on the things that are the easy parts and not so much on the hard part.
Well,
or maybe they're all hard.
But if as a lot of us have looked at those standards, they can be interpreted many, many ways. And,
oh, yeah.
And the implementation of this is going to be the tricky part. You know, how those are supposed to be performance expectations. That's what a student can do at the end of the, you know, at the end of the day, at the
right.
end
but
of that
grade period.
But
defining what that is.
Yeah, exactly. And then defining what kinds of experiences will be required in order for those students to be able to do that expectation. That's going to be the part that we are going to get to struggle with.
Yeah.
A lot of work to do.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
looking
at retirement's looking good already.
Yeah, man, that's for sure. Actually, it will be an interesting process because the very cool thing is that the educators that have looked at this are very excited. They want to adopt it now.
Really?
Yeah. The few educators that I've talked to that have really done a serious look-see at these things are excited about the opportunity. And this really opens up the door for them to do some creative problem-solving and group projects and project-based learning. I mean, this is an opportunity that, you know, they've been stuck in this assessment hole for a long time now, and this kind of frees them from that, from those fetters. So,
I mean, but can we just stick on that for a second? I mean, Peg, that's a really important point, because the morale of the teaching pool that are the implementers, a key implementer of our climate literacy goal, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, they're just getting shafted, and the morale is not good. And when they, what you just said is a huge, you know, shot in the arm for getting that morale back, because that's why we used to go to work every day.
Yeah.
And I mean, is that what they're starting to say?
I think so. I think that, you know, there's, of course, there are going to be some people who will be very skeptical about this. You know, oh, it's just going to be business as usual, and they're just going to test the heck out of us anyway. But I think for some of them that can read between the lines of what really is being trying to be done here about the infusion of core ideas and cross-cutting concepts and the science and engineering ideas, that some of them see the possibilities and they're ready to jump in. So I'm that to me makes me postpone my retirement just a little bit more.
Good.
Well, actually, it's an interesting point. I'm going to be, I have a project called Earth Labs that we're going to be in Texas next week doing a teacher professional development around the use of the modules and in Mississippi the following week.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be interesting, I think maybe we'll have a little conversation on our just networking time to see what teachers think about the next generation, if any of them have even had a chance to look at them.
Well, you know, it might be interesting for you just to take a few of those draft standards, and if they have not seen them, to at least, you know, throw them up on a slide and say, what do you think?
Yeah, actually, that's a good idea.
But that would be real cool to get some feedback from Texas and Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
But
and
you know,
I'll tell you something. In terms of Mississippi, it's a state where, I mean, the way we're running this professional development is we're having a group of teachers that we've been working with now for a year to train a larger group of teachers on the use of these modules. And the teachers in Mississippi are much less experienced at any of this. And one of the teachers, when we did pilots this year, and one of the teachers got their students to provide their assessments orally. And when we asked her why, because what we wanted was we wanted the written assessments so that we could improve the modules, her high school seniors are reading at the second grade level.
Oh,
and that's why she did them orally.
Wow.
So, I mean, so there's these kinds of issues that we're also addressing, too. I mean,
right.
I don't know how these students got to be high school seniors reading only at the second grade
yeah.
level, but
that's the conundrum. You can't mm-hmm. have environmental literacy or climate literacy if you don't have basic literacy.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, just to take that one step further, I mean, the in my schools, the person who cared about, you know, being able to evaluate information sources and look for credible information were the librarians. I mean, that's library
yeah.
science, and they really drill that hard, and that is critical to us. And yet, you know, I mean, is that happening in that school with those high school seniors? I mean, are they able to do that skillfully? Unknown, maybe. And Tamara, there's one other document you might want to look at. I found very useful was in the. I can send it to you if you like. It's the conceptual shift in the next generation science standards. We
mm-hmm.
We looked at this a couple times, and there was a lot of really rich thinking that opened up, kind of that I think got to what Peg was maybe what Peg was talking about in this kind of. I'm getting excited to teach again. Because there's stuff implied in here that's really rich and valuable and creative.
Yeah, sure. Send that on to me.
Sure.
This is Marta. So can we start working with some of these things now? My real question is that we have a project that hopefully will start this fall working with Native American and Latino kids, and it's about, I can't remember if I talked about this at another call, but it's about looking at sustainability and having them identify different quote-unquote problems in their own communities or their own families or, you know, where they live, essentially, that can be informed by science and expressed through the arts. And so it would be, and particularly we're interested in working with the kids who aren't necessarily as literate, you know, aren't really high in their reading abilities yet. And so I'm just wondering if we could try to do some test kinds of things with some of these modules, if it's possible, or do we have to wait until they're official?
This is Peg. I would go ahead and take these performance expectations. They're not, they're not really classroom ready in terms of here's what you would do.
Right.
That would be up for you to interpret, but at the same time, you could kind of use them to guide some of your thinking about what kinds of science practices are going to be expected,
mm-hmm.
Maybe some general ideas of some tasks that you might consider infusing. I also would highly recommend a book called Children of the Seventh Fire that was an Ojibwe story that has been told to Lisa Hart by the elders of the Ojibwe tribe. And it's about sustainability and about choices. And I think it would be a really great stepping-off point for some of your students. It's written in an upper elementary, middle school level.
Great. Thank you so much.
Children of the Seventh Fire. There's a website and teacher's guide, too.
Great. Thanks.
I wouldn't wait. I'll just let you know that I worked on the New Jersey writing effort to write new assessments based on the framework. So that was even one iteration back, so people are not waiting. People are starting
right.
to jump on. I can tell you that the textbook companies are probably already busy at work rewriting their textbooks to first draft. So.
And when will my sense is that when things get to this level, this state, it seems to me that, yes, there's going to be modifications in wording and there may be something added, but what's there is probably going to, the spirit of it is going to remain.
I think so too.
And the other thing that they, as you remember, and maybe Marty, you caught this, was what they were saying is that the framework is the firewall from the science community, that the core disciplinary ideas are not changing. They're not being edited. They are what they are, and there will be no fissures in that strategy as far as what they're hoping to do right now. And so while the cross-cutting ideas and the practices might, you know, evolve a little bit, but the core disciplinary ideas are set.
Great.
Already.
Thanks. And when will, do we know when it's supposed to actually be final, whatever the...
I think there's going to be another iteration of comment. Like in November or something, if I'm remembering correctly.
and November 7th.
All right, I'm remembering correctly.
No, I'm being facetious.
I mean, there is going to be another iteration. Is that correct? I thought there was going to be another round of comments.
I've heard at least one. Mm-hmm. But Peg, you're implying possibly more.
I thought I heard it at least two, but then I'm not for sure about that.
Okay.
There will be another one later this summer, I think.
Oh, really?
Well, in the near future.
I heard, when we were briefed, they were basically saying they were going to hold off until after the election for anything.
That might be possible.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I mean, who knows? I mean, these things are dynamic, right?
Yeah, but at one point I kind of heard that there was going to be like two more revision cycles, so I don't know. But the final won't come out till now next year. So.
Of a statement that you say that it is kind of an interesting cultural statement that it may be put off until after the election.
Oh, yeah.
That the election would impact how these evolve.
Yes.
Right.
Yep. And which states will buy in? I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. South Carolina has already said they will not adopt these new science standards.
Yeah,
because of climate.
Wow.
And wasn't there something in Florida as well?
I don't know. But, you know, Florida's kind of a lost cause. As a lot of people say, it's indefensible. And it was interesting, Tamara, that the sea level conference that you're going to go to, it says, you know, that quite a bit of the 40% of the sea level impacts are going to be Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, and they don't want anything to do with the youth standards either, so let's stick our heads in the sand and wait for it to get
to right.
Mandated.
Well, Jeff Ryan is working really hard, you know, just to address, I mean, obviously towns all around Florida are being impacted now. It's not a matter of it's going to happen in 20 years or 50 years, yep. It's like now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Water intrusion.
But, you know, there's another piece to that, which is going to come up in the near future, is the NSF CSEP Phase 2 funding decisions are going to, they should be, you know, sometime in the next month at least.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that is going to add implementation capabilities or not for the implications of these, because they're going to be lasting 5 years, and this is going to be well into the process of these. And so, like, made clear from Maryland and Delaware would open up that door nice and strong and help us or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just another piece to this puzzle, if you guys follow where I'm going here.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these play out. Nobody, as far as I know, nobody's heard anything yet. I had thought that they were going to find out, announce things at the beginning of June, and that's where we are now. So,
I do know that they were having a hard time with the panel, the CSEP Phase 2 panel, because there are just so many people who had a conflict of interest because of the nature of those proposals.
Yeah.
They had a problem putting together a panel, or they
assembling a panel.
Did they assemble a panel? I mean,
Yes. No, it's done.
It's done.
I don't know anything more than that. I stick my head in the sand when those conversations start.
Yeah.
But
When did that happen? At the end of May? Or
I don't know. I know that the panel happened. But I know that one of the things that was delaying them was that they were having a hard time because, everybody in the community was involved in one of these at some level.
Right.
Yeah.
And so finding somebody who is a credible panel member who is not compromised was again, a challenge.
Yeah. I've been told that often, that I've disqualified myself from almost every panel
member. Right, right. I mean, you know, that's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
It just makes it challenging to put a panel together.
Yeah.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Okay. This is Marta. This is a really stupid question, and I can maybe talk to somebody offline. But are these national standards? Does each state just adopt those standards, or then does each state have their own standards, or how does
that? It's not a dumb question at all, Marta.
Okay.
What we did in the past is dumb, but it's not a dumb question.
This may be smarter.
No, in the past there's been the national standards, but then that was not binding on anybody, and each state had their own frameworks and standards for their students. And what is hoped through this process is that we that a national set of standards are being developed that states will eventually, if not right away, buy into using so that there's a common set of standards. But no state is required to. In fact, as you've heard referred to, the 26 states have not agreed to absolutely adopt them, but only to seriously consider adopting them.
Gotcha. Okay.
Tamara, when I talk about this, I actually describe this as sort of pan-state effort because it actually isn't national. This
right.
is something that came out of the National Governors Association, if I remember correctly, and it really is being driven by the states, mm-hmm. and it's also being not driven by federal agencies.
Right.
The National Academy and CHIEVE are not government agencies. So this is, it's, as close as this can be, this is kind of a grassroots effort
yep.
On the part of the state to come to some kind of consensus. So, and I don't know if Frank or Peg, do you agree with that assessment? Am I kind of reading this right? Or
So let me just point everybody to the banner on the Next Generation Science Standards.
Yep.
First of all, it's Next Generation, not National. The
yep.
N is Next, not National. And the tagline below Next Generation Science Center says, for states, by states.
Yes.
So, I mean, but Marta, the key here, that is an evolution, a healthy evolution, is that the states, you know, all the states who do adopt it would adopt the same standards, as opposed to then take those national standards and then make a state version and sometimes a county version and sometimes a whatever version. I mean, there's a lot of standards out there. This would actually simplify the standards setup greatly, but it is definitely states doing it. There's no national in it.
Gotcha.
And also simplifies things on the part of those of us who develop curriculum materials, and because for the most part, I mean, you can talk about aligning your materials to the national standards, of which nobody, the current science standards, nobody really uses those as their standards. They each have their own state standards. And I can tell you one of the CSET Phase 1 projects, the one for the Southeast United States, CLPSE, they went ahead and all the resources that they identified, they aligned with the standards for the 11 states in the region that they encompass. So that's so in a sense they've created an alignment between the different state standards. But you can see the issue with now they just have 11 states. But if you're developing materials that you're hoping to facilitate being used nationally, each state wants it to be aligned with what their standards are, so that they're to facilitate their teachers using it. But that it's a whole lot of extra work if they. If the states agree on a consistent set of standards, it makes things much more concrete, and you can develop materials that are better because they have more specific goals rather than the goals for Mississippi and for Texas and for Georgia and for Florida, and you know, so
mm-hmm. right.
It makes for better materials too.
Okay.
Isn't it also true that there are county standards in some states?
I'm not sure about that. I can just tell you that in Massachusetts, like each little town has their own curriculum. They, you know, it's their own school district. And so while Massachusetts has these standards and frameworks and they have testing at the state level, what is actually taught is different. And I can tell you one of the issues that can come up is if even if in the order that you teach the science courses, if in one state you teach biology, chemistry, then physics, and another state you teach physics, chemistry, and then biology, then if somebody moves from one state to the other, they could be in the 12th grade and never get biology or never get physics, or unless they then go back and take a course that is outside of their grade level, which is, you know, I mean, can be socially difficult or, you know, and depending on the level of the concepts, I mean, the level of the math skills needed could be a problem. So so I know that that's true in Massachusetts. I don't know about other states.
Yeah, I was just thinking about just simplifying the workload for everybody involved in the education community by doing this, if we actually get this done, it's a tremendous efficiency. And, you know, I didn't know if there's any way to kind of characterize it at all. I don't know if anybody's ever seen anything like that, but, I mean, it's definitely there.
Jean just listened to a webinar today called Intellectual Efficiency, and I would say this is definitely one piece of that.
I like that.
Well, I've talked to some other folks, and part of the idea of having this cross-cutting concepts and just a few disciplinary core ideas was this making it much more concise so that it isn't as rich, for example, as the literacy document, but it gets to the same points. And of course, these are framed as performance expectations and not something that's telling you exactly how to develop a curriculum. So it was a very conscious part on approach on the part of the writers of the first versions of this. Keep it simple. That was the good news for us, is yes, they kept it simple, but it's rich enough to cover climate in a way that it was never really covered in any other national focus standard.
You know, Scott, there's one other aspect that just occurred to me as you said that, was that when we did the alignment between the climate literacy document and the benchmarks, there were concepts that didn't find any alignments. And one of the things we thought about was perhaps those ideas are really undergraduate ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that perhaps some of the gaps are, you know, I'm thinking of like, you know, 7F about human health and mortality rates. Maybe that's, we do have something, but I'm just thinking like, you know, some of these might be, that lifelong learning thing.
It's really more into undergrad.
They might be really where you handle that the complexities of some of these things are up there.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that till now.
Are you guys familiar with the strand maps?
And
so you look at the benchmarks, but they're in that networked fashion, so you get an idea of the depth and the cross links.
We already mapped. We have extensive mapping with climate literacy in the strand maps.
You can go to the Clean Portal and see those.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one thing I did ask. Joellen Roseberg from AAAS, if they were planning to align the benchmarks with the next generation standards. And at this point, they have no plans to do that, mostly because they don't have any funding to do that. So,
yeah, I asked Ted Willis what he said, too.
That's something that's going to have to be addressed also.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, obviously, they're going to wait until they're actually finalized. But.
Right, but if you're interested in this, there's a document that I developed that actually does all the mapping on the strand maps, the full maps. What Tamara is referring to is kind of smaller pieces of that puzzle, but we did do all that crosswalking and analysis, and there was an interesting question of like, well, the strand maps stop at grade 12, but is this idea above these? Into the undergraduate. And
Frank, what we should do is, that is a comprehensive document. Maybe we should, you developed it for CLEAN, but maybe we should post it on the Climate Literacy Network website so that
sure.
It's available to anybody.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
Yeah.
Well, the other piece of that is we can do that, but we still have the outstanding task with energy literacy, and we were going to, once we had that, we were going to map that out the same way, just so we could really see the intersections between climate and energy literacy. It's a rich thing that we have the energy awareness, but we don't have the actual full energy literacy yet. Sorry if that was a lot of code for a lot of people. We're getting geeky here. I'm sorry.
Short version of that, but basically, we've got new principles for energy, but the CLEAN collection was developed on an old set of principles, so
right.
It'll be updated. And I think that's really worth doing. But whether we can do it in the next couple of months, I don't know.
Well, it's waiting for AAAS to finalize their crosswalk. As soon as that happens, then there's just a series of steps that happen on our side.
Yeah, that's
but
good.
We're just waiting for them to finish that work.
Okay, that's good.
So this is Marta again. So when I talk to my middle schools here, and I know that their teachers are quickly trying to learn some kind of new science standards that I don't know. I imagine now that they're state standards, but I don't know for sure. And I can tell them, well, here are some national standards, next generation standards.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ask me, and so, well, what's going to happen with these? I mean, will they be adopted? How will they be adopted? You know, what's that process? Is there just something on the website that I just have to look at and
sure.
read?
Marta, which state are you referring to?
Colorado.
So Colorado is not a lead state partner as of yet with
okay.
the next generation standards. And I don't know if they plan to in the near term, but they are currently not in there. So you would probably be best served by the state standards and
okay.
then... And then, you know, allude to these things
uh-huh.
that are being discussed in the next generation.
Yeah.
That'd be my impression.
Okay. And so when, I guess really what I'm asking is, so then how does Colorado become, you know, part of this mix? Is that all through the school board? Is it?
No, it's the department. I mean, Peg, maybe you know best, but my understanding is it's through the departments of education at the state level.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
So your science supervisor would probably be a good person to talk to.
Right.
Oh, great. Okay.
And I believe this person's being hired. There's somebody new being hired as we speak.
In Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Another possible resource is Karen Hallwick, in also in Colorado. So she probably knows this part too.
Okay.
The national and the state stuff.
Great. I'll connect with her.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, she's usually on. But not today.
Thank you for holding my hand through this process.
Really, oh, hey, we've all been there.
That's what this is all about.
Exactly. We're all here.
You mean this is clear as mud? Take a drink.
Stop it. I don't think anybody really understands what's happening here.
We play a good game, though.
It sounds very official. It's when you throw the numbers and the acronyms around.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's a clear indication we have no idea what we're talking about.
It's a real bell. So true.
It's so funny but true.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should leave on that note. We just laughed.
Okay, so, yes, we are at the end of the hour. So thanks, everybody, for participating in an interesting discussion today. Next week, we will have Howard Walters talk about the Great Lakes Climate Change Education Partnership. And so we'll talk to everybody then.
And he may even know if he's gotten funding or not by then.
Maybe we will.
Take care, all.
All right. Thanks,
everybody.
All right,
bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.